Hello everyone, welcome to another Guardian Project podcast. I'm Fabiola Maurice, and today I have with me once again one of our founders, David Oliver. Hi David, how are you?
Hi Fabi, how are you doing?
Doing great, I'm happy to have you here. David is joining us today because he's going to talk about a new technology that could potentially revolutionize the way we store and share information. It's called the Interplanetary File System, or IPFS. David, can you tell us what IPFS is?
Sure, thanks, Fabi. The Interplanetary File System is a decentralized file store with a single namespace for all content, no matter where it resides, with the proviso that the owners of those files decide what they want to be displayed or shown in that fashion. IPFS doesn't require central servers. Instead, it's a network of peer computers, often called a peer-to-peer network or P2P. IPFS and many of its software components are key elements of what folks call Web 3.0, or the decentralized web. IPFS started as a project by programmer Juan Bennett, who later founded Protocol Labs. And today, that's the group that guides this work.
Universal file access, doesn't HTTP already offer that?
Yeah, it does. It does. HTTP expanded the definition of a file's path to include its internet domain and its access protocol. Thus, files were, or more broadly, content in general, not just files, were made universally accessible with this scheme. The full path giving the complete address on the internet for any piece of content. The difference is that the namespace used by the Interplanetary File System is independent of the file's location. In IPFS, content can be cached on any or maybe many IPFS nodes.
Dave, I can think of so many things wrong with that idea. For one, how can you find anything?
Yeah, that was a head turner for me too. It turns out you don't find it yourself. The identifier for each file on IPFS doesn't give you any hint about if the content type, such as if it's an image or a text file, or its location. And it's hard to memorize these content identifiers, and they're impossible to transcribe. They're just so much gobbledygook text. So instead, you have to let IPFS find things for you using its network of what are called peer nodes, IPFS peers. Your IPFS peers work together to find your file using some IPFS magic, maybe you could say. But this really isn't all that unusual, Fabi. When you think about the disk drive on your computer or the memory storage on your mobile device, these things are managed in a way that's pretty much opaque from applications or the operating system. The applications don't understand, don't really have to deal with the details of how files are actually stored in storage. Instead, there are subsystems that figure that out. And although IPFS, if you hear people talk about the details, it sounds very opaque. In fact, we've been dealing with these layers of complexity for quite some time.
Okay, but how can you tell the content is authentic then?
It is true that if content can be stored anywhere, you might be suspicious that you received it from a wrong place, or maybe that the person or the facility that delivered you that content has manipulated it somehow. But IPFS actually does a better job of this even than HTTP does. And that's because a file's identifier, the content ID, we call it, actually serves as its authenticator because the identifier is based on the concept of a secure hash. Each piece of content creates a unique identifier, and that means globally unique. And that identifier can be checked against the file when it's received. So no matter where the file gets delivered from, its content can be tested against the identifier for authenticity. it either fails or matches. Even if one character changed or one bit even, there's a dramatically different identifier created. So when you ask for identifier X, only the original content that produced that identifier is valid, no matter where you received it.
Then what happens if there are two files on two different computers that have the same content, like just Hello World?
Yeah, then IPFS treats those files as cached versions of the same content. Because it's true, it seems a little hard to believe if you don't deeply understand the concept of secure hashes, that no matter what computer you're on, if you run the hash algorithm on the same piece of content in two locations, it always produces the same result. So what IPFS says, if I have a file that says Hello World and your file says Hello World, they hash to the same content ID, and therefore they're just a cached version of the identical content, meaning they're the same.
Maybe we're on the weeds now. It's so important.
I know. Why are we going off on this tangent, right? Well, whereas HTTP has location-based addressing, which means the actual location in storage of the file augmented by the domain and the protocol gives you an exact address, IPFS uses content-based addressing. The problem with HTTP being location-based is that it's easy to block the IP address of the host delivering that content. Since the domain name is part of the actual location, and a domain name resolves to an IP address, you can just block that IP address if you don't want that content seen. On the other hand, on IPFS, its network of peer computers exchange the content and cache the content in a way where it doesn't have to come from its origin address. It can be delivered from anywhere, like wikipedia.org, a page from that site might get delivered by mytinyhost.net. And nobody would ever be interested in blocking mytinyhost.net. So because the content is freed up from its location, blocking IP addresses is useless against IPFS.
That's very interesting. Dave, can you tell us if there are other problem or problems that IPFS solve?
Yes, although it's kind of a stretch at the moment to think this way, it's sometimes said that IPFS could make the internet's content permanent in the sense of the Internet Archive's Wayback Machine, where you can look at the New York Times homepage from, 1994 exactly as it was presented. And that further, that content would never go away. Now, you can have a kind of intellectual and technical debate about this idea of whether a permanent web is interesting and why do we need that? But a easier way to think about it might be that IPFS really can be used to mitigate the damage caused when websites permanently go down, or whether they modify content from the original content, or whether the people who publish the content themselves don't find the content valuable anymore. So sometimes, for example, certain of the news websites just delete their content after 2 years or something like that. And it's also true that, again, if content is undesirable from the sense that authorities don't want people to see it, then that content might get removed, or the website might get taken down, or people arrested, and therefore that content just goes away. So even if you don't believe in the permanent web, this idea that things can be reconstituted or made available elsewhere can be really a powerful idea.
All right, but Why would anyone ever volunteer to store someone else's content, Dave?
You know, and we said above that content could be available on lots of computers. And you're right. Why would anybody just store content? So I think the most valid reason is a little bit altruistic. As we say, it's a social reason. And I always point to the example of the project called Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, or SETI. And this is a long time ago. And the SETI people who were working on an aerospace project, the idea of mining the normal data set received from radio transmissions that we're monitoring to look for anomalous signals. Well, that took a huge amount of computing power, which they didn't have. So they just asked people, hey, would you run this little piece of code for us? And millions of people said yes, because it was an exciting, sort of tantalizing project done by people who had solid credentials and were excited about their work. And people just ran that code on their computer without even thinking about it. So it kind of shows that there's this, people will be involved in things that they perceive as scientifically or socially useful for no reimbursement, just because they think it's a good goal. And if we look at this idea of storing critical or very useful information for a long time because society needs it, then you can imagine that people would be interested in doing that. Also, we know from Tor's Snowflake project that people are pretty excited to help other people get on the Tor network using this concept of ephemeral bridges or snowflakes, and people just volunteer their time. So I think this idea that you can tell people, wow, we want to be able to store things to make sure people in the future get to see that material, then that really might be enough. That really might be the tantalizing part of it. Maybe. If not, there's always Filecoin.
Wait, what's Filecoin?
Filecoin is a blockchain cryptocurrency that uses the idea of proof of storage. It's kind of complicated, and just like all of the other cryptocurrencies, are a little bit hard to define, but the idea is to create a financial incentive for people to take part. So people that agree to store items can be rewarded with file coins, they're called, with Filecoin, for the amount of items they store and the duration they store them for. And then the Filecoin currency can be exchanged for another currency, whether it's real money or Bitcoin or whatever we happen to believe is valuable in the future.
Oh my God, another cryptocurrency.